We've given everyone their buffer time. Thanks all for coming. My name is Doug Johnson from Metropolitan Transportation Commission. We have two items on the agenda today, but they each could certainly take up their full allotted 50 minutes or so of discussion time. Why don't we do a quick round of introductions, and then we will go ahead and jump into the first one.
Good morning. I'm Ken Kirky with AVEC.
I'm Craig Goldblatt with MTC.
Aaron Acknin with the City of San Bruno.
Mark Sullivan with the City of San Bruno.
Stephanie Reyes with Greenbelt Alliance.
Jeff Levin, City of Oakland.
Nathan Landau, AC Transit.
Debbie Hill, City of Brentwood Planning.
Curtis Williams, City of Palo Alto.
Carol Johnson, City of Concord.
Steve Piasecki, Morgan Hill.
Eric Alm, Caltrans District 4 Planning.
Sarwana Sudhundra with Alameda County Transportation Commission.
Linda Jackson with Transportation Authority of Marin.
Mike Moore, City of Mill Valley, representing the Marin County Planning Directors.
John Sagomny, Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority.
Brad Beck, Contra Costa Transportation Authority.
Val Minotti, BART.
Richard Burnett, MTC Policy Advisory Council.
Great, thanks everybody. Just a friendly reminder that when we get into the discussion, we'll have a maximum of four lights that can be on at one time for the speaker system. So just don't keep pressing the button. If it doesn't light up, there's too many folks ahead of you. And if you're out in the audience, please remember that these meetings are being webcast, and so you are encouraged to ask your questions at a microphone. You're even welcome to join us at the table. With that, Ken Kirky is going to lead us through a discussion of the draft preferred land use strategy. And with that, Ken, go ahead.
Thanks, Doug. I'm aware that a number of you have heard this presentation at least twice, four times, maybe five. So I'm going to try to hit the highlights, recognizing that some of you haven't heard it at all, but some of you have heard it an awful lot, and try to strike a balance there. And if, as Doug said, if you have specific questions after the presentation, we can get into some more detail. So as you all know, we have had a series of scenarios that have been released over the past year. First, the initial vision scenario about a year ago. Then we had a series of alternative scenarios. 2 weeks ago at the joint meeting of the MTC Planning and ABAG Administrative Committee, the committees released the jobs, housing, connection scenario. This is the land use component of the draft preferred scenario. It's structured around a couple of things. One, a lot of the feedback and input we've received over the past year, particularly from local jurisdictions. The priority development area framework, which is also in large part related to what local jurisdictions are trying to advance in terms of community development. It's also based on the fact that we've heard over and over and over again through this process about the economy and that the Bay Area can't take its economy for granted, and we should be really trying to connect jobs and housing and transit. And so the scenario is structured to prepare the region for job growth, really provide more housing and transportation choices for future Bay Area residents and families, per SB 375, align transportation investments with growth, and also house the region's population at all income levels. So first, a look at the control totals. I think most of you are aware that we've been working, staff has been working with a number of consultants. Stephen Levy of the Center for the Continuing Study of the California Economy, Strategic Economics, Karen Chappell at UC Berkeley, to really look at our forecast and how ABAG forecasts related to demographics in population land use, the forecasting that we do related to land use. Here you see control totals that are different than what you've seen for the previous scenarios. For jobs, we're looking at growth going to 2040 of about 1.1 million jobs, population about 2.1 million people. And to provide enough housing for that level of job growth, we're forecasting about 660,000 units. There are a number of assumptions behind the job growth. One is that we get back to a healthy national economy, including that the national unemployment rate would decrease to about 6% by 2018. There's also an assumption that the Bay Area's share of jobs, so the nine counties' share of the national total, would rise very slightly from 2.4% in 2010 to 2.5% by 2040. That's still lower than where we've been before at some of our peaks, but it's a bit of an improvement. We think that, you know, given a number of strengths, that there is a reason for the Bay Area to say that we can be ambitious, that we can achieve a level of job growth. I know there's some skepticism. We've been asked to do a peer review on this, and we are going to be working with the Bay Area Council of Economic Institutes, a number of their consultants, to peer review the employment growth component. But in particular, I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that the job growth is based on the fact that looking at the Bay Area's economy relative to the nation's, that we have several sectors here of knowledge-based jobs that are really the sectors that the United States is expected to grow during this period, and they are jobs that really want to be in this area. The job growth is somewhat dependent upon, beyond the national economy, it's significantly dependent upon the level of housing growth that we can provide in this region so we don't choke off the job growth going forward. The 1.1 million jobs is also based on the fact that we're coming out of a really deep and awful recession. There are roughly 300,000 jobs out of the 1.1 million that will be jobs for people who are currently unemployed or underemployed getting back into the workforce. And I think it's also important to note that this level of job growth doesn't have a commensurate level of new office space or commercial space going with it. Again, we're working through a lot of vacancies, and that will have to play itself out over this period. The scenario shifts the number of jobs in the priority development areas from 2010 to 2040. You see an increase from about 47% to 52%. We've also looked at the spatial location of new employment. We believe, and the consultants we've been working with believe, that given the types of jobs that are expected to grow in this region, the leading industry jobs, the knowledge sectors, that our major regional centers, so the downtowns of Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, should be able to capture a fair bit of this growth, which is good from a transit perspective, we think, and a regional perspective in terms of what SB 375 is about. Office parks are a really big deal in this region, as you all know. They're not going to go away, but we generally think that they're going to start to shift over time. We have a number of office parks, particularly in the South Bay and on the peninsula, where the park developers or the corporate entities such as Google, which are the big tenants or the owners of those parks, are proposing major changes to provide significantly more on-site amenities to improve their transit connectivity, in some cases to add housing on-site to make for more of a complete community of what is now strictly an office park, oftentimes not well connected to transit. The downtown areas and transit corridors, these are in many cases sort of mid-sized city priority development areas, and we expect there will be some job growth in these areas in part because of the number of residences that are being planned for these areas, so there'll be more residents serving jobs in these areas. Industrial and agricultural land are important to the region in a couple of respects. In terms of employment, we do expect to see a continued but more modest than in recent years decline in manufacturing employment. The manufacturing sector has lost, as you know, huge industries over the past couple of decades. The consultants that we've worked with have suggested that a lot of what we're going to lose, we've already lost. that our manufacturing sector is more tied to the region now. It needs to be here, which sort of calls for, among other things, making sure we preserve some of our goods movement and industrial lands to allow those sectors to remain. Our agricultural sector isn't a big part of our employment base, but it's an important part of our employment base. Obviously, we've done a lot as a region to protect the Green Belt. We have a really famous wine industry that produces a lot of jobs beyond the agricultural sector for tourism and so forth. In terms of population growth, we're looking at a level of population growth through this period, a rate that is lower than the last 30 years, about 29% versus 42%. It's important to note, I think, a couple of things. Most of this growth is related to natural increase, more people being born than dying. Some of it is related to job growth. If we don't have the job growth we're projecting, we're not going to have this level of population growth, and the two are connected. The really big change that is being forecasted is a huge increase in the senior population. If you look at the gray columns for 2040, you can see that the senior population, the over 65 population, is by far the smallest. It no longer will be as we move toward 2040. 131% increase, which we think is a really big deal in terms of housing choices, the types of places many people in this cohort will want to choose to live if they have some choices. And we tend to think that's one of the big challenges of the SCS, is that in many parts of the region, we don't really have a lot of options for people who want to move out of their single-family homes and be in more walkable communities and so forth. This suggests there's going to be a really significant market segment looking for that type of housing going forward. The population in the PDAs is slated to grow up. Most of the population will still be outside of PDAs in 2040, but it's certainly a significant shift in that direction. In terms of the housing unit forecast, there are a couple of really key inputs. One is local government input, and we really can't say enough how much we appreciate how much work, how much time local jurisdictions have put into providing us information, and congestion management agencies have worked on the SCS. It's been really key toward informing where we're at now in the scenario. We know your resources are not endless, so we really do appreciate that. So in terms of structuring the forecast, we looked at local plan capacity. We looked at priority development areas and generally shot for no more than a midpoint for priority development areas in terms of the selected place type and how much growth was being distributed in terms of housing to a given PDA. We also did a lot of work well beyond what we've done in the past in terms of market analysis. We really looked at how much housing can we expect in this region, particularly given that this is a very, very different growth pattern than the region had starting out 30 years ago. This is largely infill. We're looking at a period where, as you all know, we just lost redevelopment. Infill is difficult in terms of lot sizes, in terms of brownfield issues. In many cases, there are lots of challenges that we're going to have to work through as a region and across the various communities. We looked at transit service. We looked at the need to construct neighborhood amenities to really make places viable and attractive, particularly in terms of market rate development going forward. In the previous scenarios, we did not address the issue of vacancies. And at some point, we figured out that would probably be pretty important given the impact of the recession and the housing crisis on the region and particularly some communities. So the housing unit forecast includes a housing unit column and a household column. And in many communities in the region, because of the levels of vacancies, the households, in terms of vacant households, are a big factor. Regionally, we have a vacancy rate of about 6.4% right now. 4% is considered normal. So this assumes that we get back to that over this time period, but it'll take time. Finally, we also, in this scenario, we hadn't in the previous scenarios, really looked at group housing and where group housing might be. We're doing some more work on that right now in terms of a refinement, but with a big growth in the senior population, we think group housing is a really important consideration as we move forward. So in terms of housing production, again, 660,000 units by 2040. You'll see that 2010 to 2020, it's a more modest level of growth. That's in part because we're digging out of the recession. We still have foreclosures to work through. We believe that something will have to come along to replace redevelopment and come up with more affordable housing subsidy than we currently have. And there's an assumption that that will happen, but it's going to take time. The share of housing in the PDAs bumps up. So then looking at the housing and employment distribution across the region, you can see that in terms of jobs, our more urban counties will take on a larger share of the growth. They have a far larger share of jobs now. It's expected that those areas will take on most of the region's job growth. Our most rural counties will see relatively minimal job growth. The same is true with housing units. You can see that for the Bay Area, the percent of employment located in PDAs increases and bumps up over 50%. Obviously, in San Francisco, it's now over 80%, a slightly higher percentage going forward. Our most rural counties, it's a much lower percentage. Housing units follow the same sort of pattern. Although so much of the emphasis on PDAs early on was on housing, we actually have a higher percentage of jobs located in PDAs than housing. Right now, roughly 25% of housing in the Bay Area is in PDAs. We expect that will move toward 40%. But it's still the majority of housing units, as we mentioned before, will not be in priority development areas. The other side of the coin for the focus program is the priority conservation areas. And we think that along with understanding that housing production is really key for job growth and future job growth, it's also important to understand what this region is up against in terms of a potential growth pattern if it wants to retain its green belt. In the 1970s and 1980s, there were huge greenfield areas in Contra Costa County and Silicon Valley. All the outer parts of the region or inland parts of the region that could accommodate new greenfield development. We still have some greenfield capacity, and some of it is captured in this scenario inside the urban growth boundaries, but it's pretty finite. If the region wants to accommodate not just future jobs, but wants to have places for our kids, our grandchildren to live, it's going to have to make an infill pattern work, or as one of the members of our MTC Planning ABAG Administrative Committee said, let's call the question and talk about the green belt because there's really not another option. If we want to preserve the green belt, we have to make an infill strategy work or have an enormous level of in-commuting going forward, which is clearly not workable. So I've touched on most of this already. I think one thing that's important to note is that the housing unit forecast is actually lower than it might be. If it was increased by 85,000 units, looking at the level of employment growth, which was forecast for the region, we could assume an additional 110,000 jobs. We actually ratcheted down the job growth because when we looked at the housing unit forecast, looked at the loss of redevelopment, looked at jurisdictional capacity, some of the challenges in communities that have a lot of capacity but need huge levels of infrastructure support and so forth, we did not see how we got to that higher number. But in terms of employment and employment that wants to be here, the analysis suggests that if we had the housing, we could have a higher level of job growth. I'll just quickly march through some of our challenges. Employment concentration is not adequately well served by transit. In particular, we have a big last mile issue. I am really sorry. That's particularly true on the peninsula, where we have a lot of transit that is located east of 101, away from Caltrain. That's an issue around different parts of the region that's going to have to be addressed if we're going to make for more connectivity to our employment centers. We're much closer in terms of our highway network where transit is located. The big issue, and it's been a big issue for a very long time, it still is, we're the least affordable housing market in the country. By far, these are actually the 10 least affordable housing markets, and you can see where San Jose and San Francisco metropolitan areas are on this slide. There is some good news. Even through the recession, the region was growing, was continuing to attract knowledge-based jobs, and those knowledge-based jobs have been increasingly drawn to the priority development areas. In a very real way, we see this in terms of job growth in San Francisco in the past year, up and down the peninsula in some key communities and in San Jose. Some of the strategies, we're going to obviously need regional investments to foster job growth in PDAs, improve work accessibility. MTC and ABAG received a grant from HUD that is set up to link workforce training, employment growth with workforce housing and transit. I've touched on a number of these challenges. Probably the most significant is that even as the median housing price in the region has come down, the affordability gap has actually increased for very low, low and moderate income households. And that has to do with pretty stagnant incomes, a loss of equity for a lot of households, and a loss of subsidies for the very low and low income categories. That's obviously a huge challenge moving forward. It's not all bad, though. There are some positive trends. One is that most of the housing being built in the region now is now multifamily. That's been true for the past several years. In 2010, multifamily developments were 65% of all permits versus 25% in 1990. The big numbers of housing units being approved right now in the region are multifamily to a large extent. And a lot of that is occurring in PDAs relatively close to employment. We've seen increases in housing in some key cities. Again, we think the growth of senior population is something that will work well with this pattern. And you know, as Dina Belzer described at one of our last meetings, the trend for young professionals is to want to be close to jobs, and a lot of the employers are moving to particular locations to capture their workers and be in proximity to them. In terms of strategies, there's a lot of work that needs to be addressed in terms of what do we do to replace redevelopment. Even while there is demand for multifamily rental housing, a lot of developers still have a great deal of difficulty getting financing for that product. What can be done about that, even with rents going through the roof? There is a role for local government, we believe. When we talk with developers, when we work with the business community, we hear over and over again that this is a really difficult place to do business. And there's a role for the region that we need to get our act together in terms of making sure that our regulations and aspirations don't collide. And for example, we are working with the Air District to address some of the CEQA guideline issues as we move toward adoption of this plan next year. But there's also, we think, a role for local government to try to make these processes more workable and get projects through the pipeline more quickly. We did do analysis on the scenario in terms of per capita greenhouse gas reductions. It reduces GHG by 9% per capita. The target for 2035 is 15%, so we're falling short. In just a few weeks, the transportation investments are going to be released at a meeting of the MTC planning, ABAG, admin committees. Included in those will be a number of transportation policy initiatives. We're also at the staff level looking at the development pattern. There are a couple of things that can be adjusted, that need to be adjusted based upon the feedback we've received thus far. One is that the unincorporated county distributions were too high. They skewed high in part because of some of the quirks around vacancy rates in the unincorporated counties. So shifting some of that should help a bit. We're looking in more detail at group quarters. Some of the suburban centers that are relatively well served by transit and that have significant job bases have pretty low housing distribution, so we're looking at that, a couple of other things to see if we can improve on the GHG front as we move toward May. And I'll get to the timeline in a moment. Just really quickly, RENA, The Housing Methodology Committee had a meeting a few weeks back. There was general consensus that the approach of tying a portion of the draft RENA methodology to the scenario made sense, and that the fair share component was generally workable. There was concern about those two items I just mentioned, that the unincorporated county numbers seemed too high, and that and a lot of that had to do with the scenario, and also that there were certain key sort of mid-sized employment-rich suburban cities who had pretty low housing allocations. We're trying to address that in the scenario, and we'll be working on that issue and bringing it back forward in May. Just touched on those items. These are the 10 cities with the highest percentage of RENA in this proposed methodology. You can see the three big cities take on a pretty big share, and then some of the suburban cities that also take on fairly, not huge percentages, but they're the 10 cities with the most. I think it's key to keep in mind with RENA, we've touched on this before, we've got an 8-year cycle versus a 7-year. The overall allocation for the period is lower, despite the fact that it's a longer period. And for better or worse, in some ways worse, because there hasn't been much housing permitted in recent years, a lot of the sites that were identified in the last round of housing elements can be utilized in this round. So our next item is the One Bay Area grants. We have really tried, and with a lot of input from all of you and others, to sync up some of the funding coming out of the regional transportation plan, going to local communities, trying to make it flexible enough that local jurisdictions can work with it, bring a lot of the conversations to the county level with a basic framework going forward, and tie that to the regional housing need allocation and the sustainable community strategy, which, as I just described, are connected. So in terms of timeline, next week on Friday, April 13th, we're going to release the transportation scenarios and the performance targets on the transportation scenario and the land use scenario to date. In May, the ABAG Executive Board and the full MTC Commission are going to meet together to jointly adopt the draft scenario. We'll also be adopting a draft RENA methodology and the One Bay Area grant. We do have on all of the base camps right now, we have information in terms of the scenario. We have some questions. If jurisdictions want to answer those questions and just provide input that way, that's fine. If you want to provide letters as you have in the past, that's great. We are saying that after May, we want to have time for additional community input, and certainly there's room for some tweaks at that point and room for engagement with local jurisdictions about how this works. And I think in particular how much policy support is going to be needed to make this happen. But if your jurisdiction has real concerns about the scenario distributions, it would be really helpful to get that relatively soon. We are going out to meetings in the counties. We've been working with congestion management agencies to try to work with groups of communities over the next month and try to answer questions you may have. In November, we'll be releasing the draft SCS RTP and the draft environmental impact report. We're looking at some scenario, EIR scenarios that will be, I believe, brought forward in June for consideration, and we'll start the process then. And then roughly a year from now, we'll be adopting the Regional Transportation Plan, the SCS, as we call it, Plan Bay Area. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Eric, quick on the draw.
Yeah. Just could you remind me, please, Ken, who the Bay Area Economic Group that was going to do the peer review of the employment forecast?
The Bay Area Council Economic Institute is the organization. Sean Randolph of the Bay Area Council chairs it, but they work with a number of different consultants, John Haveman being one of them. And what we're looking to do is to have them construct a peer review where they could have the input of perhaps several different, consultants to peer review, in particular the employment analysis.
And the time frame?
As soon as we can move it forward.
Val, then Andy.
I'm just curious if the greenhouse gas reduction per capita is at 9 and the target was 15. Is there any thought that we need to do the alternative planning
scenario? We don't think we will need to. There are a number of transportation policies that the initial assessment suggests they can play a pretty big role in reducing per capita GHG. I think some of the consideration for the policymakers will be there are costs attached to them. They're different policies, what they want to move forward on. But we think we can get there, and we think we can get there in part based upon what the other regions have done, which is to have a fairly large percentage of their GHG reductions related to supportive policies. As opposed to land use directly. I think Sandag went with something like 6.5%. So we think we're in the realm.
I'll just mention, Val, I'm sure that'll be discussed a week from Friday as the final results from this bear out. Andy, and then?
Thanks. Just a quick question. What's the difference between the draft scenario and the one BRA grant that's expected to be approved or adopted in May and the draft SCSRTP that will be released in November?
Well, our next presentation is a One Bay Area grant, but the One Bay Area grant final adoption, Craig, is slated for May. So the One Bay Area grant, in part because the regional agencies really wanted to make a shift in that direction, and I think as a measure of good faith, get out in front of the plan and try to make more money available is on a somewhat faster time frame. In terms of the draft preferred scenario, I think our general sense is with the draft preferred scenario that's adopted in May, we're really sort of pointing in a pretty solid direction at that point. It doesn't mean that there won't be some changes or there couldn't be some changes, but you all have been involved in this for a really long time. I would think at some point people will want to bring it home. We'll be taking input over the next several months. There may be changes, but our hope is that the draft preferred scenario is shooting in the direction we're going to land in.
So the ABAG Executive Board will be looking at the preferred scenario in May, and then when will they next have their hands on this?
Both the Commission and the Executive Board will review and are slated to adopt the draft preferred scenario in May. They'll then be looking at the potential EIR alternatives in June, July, and then we'll be working on that. And I think, perhaps making some refinements in terms of the plan, in terms of the scenarios, moving toward a draft SCS, but also doing a lot of work really trying to move on the policy front. We've done a lot of work on potential policies. The consultants that we've worked with have provided a lot of good input in terms of policies that the region will need to, likely put in place to try to advance some of this stuff. But I think, that's where we would really like to start to shift the conversation, to actually try to make this real.
The policies meaning like the TDM kind of stuff or funding policies?
Some of it's TDM, some of it's funding. For example, what can the region do to provide more funding for affordable housing and PDAs? Redevelopment is still an open question. There's been a lot of talk among the policymakers about a joint legislative strategy for MTC and ABAG that the local jurisdictions could get behind that would support PDA development.
Thanks.
Mike?
Ken, I had a question about with the shift now to more job development in the PDAs, just how that matches up with adopted PDAs and how much communities are going to have to go back and rejigger their PDAs to deal with the new scenario.
In a lot of communities, there's considerable existing space for additional jobs, given vacancy rates, even in some of the PDAs and other communities, to accommodate more job growth in PDAs. It will require more planning down the road, but there's substantial zoning on the ground based upon the analysis we've done in most of the PDAs to already accommodate this level of job growth. A lot of the jurisdictions are really heavily zoned for commercial and office in these locations, and that's not going to be an issue.
I think I'll just chime in. Just looking at our own stationary planning grant program, you know, cities are happily zoning away for jobs, and we'll just hope they all show up. Mr. DeWitt.
Hello, my name is Dwayne DeWitt. I'm a community planner, and for the last year I've been working in West Oakland. I have a couple of comments and then two questions. The comments are that first, as you do this process of more input during May through September, that you actually make the community meetings more accessible and larger, perhaps having even more meetings than one per area. In this case, West Oakland folks were expected to go all the way out to Dublin for the Alameda County meetings. And you basically need to have the folks who are going to be in these PDA areas have an opportunity to at least give you some input, whether you take notice of it or not. The next comment is that over there in West Oakland, we've got this difficulty of kind of silo thinking amongst various agencies. Specifically, you've got the Oakland Army base being redeveloped, which is supposed to be a job center. Then right next to it, you've got West Oakland, which is undergoing a specific plan at the same time, and yet they don't plan together. And the community has noticed this and has asked about it and has been trying to get a better, more cohesive, comprehensive planning exercise, but it's falling on deaf ears so far. So I'm hoping that you folks can perhaps mention this type of thing, because that would be the essence of regional planning, especially for a jobs housing linkage. This is one of your spots, I would think. So then the questions are, how can community members who hope to get the jobs in these areas give you some input in a positive way that it might actually be included in your plans? The existing scenario seems to be quite difficult so far, and the situations that I've seen, there's been a lot of pushback from folks who aren't as trusting as I am of you folks. So I'm hoping that we can all interact and make a really good region, because I love the San Francisco Bay Area and I'll be living here the rest of my life, and I'd like to be able to take the bus wherever I go really easy. And one of the hardest places to do it is in West Oakland, where I'm working, and there's just two bus routes and everything's just so screwed up, excuse my language. So if you could answer that question, I guess it turns into two or three questions, and that would help us all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, I guess I'll try to touch first on the public engagement piece. We are going forward in terms of how we engage with communities, really trying to partner with the congestion management agencies or the CMAs and the planning directors groups and so forth in the given counties to really try to bring the public engagement to that level. I think it's fair to say the public workshops this spring didn't go so well, and we probably won't do that exactly again. The needs of the different counties are considerable, and we're really trying to structure things so that we can get really good input at a county level. I think part of the challenge is that on the land use front in particular, land use is ultimately the domain of local governments, and to a large extent, we think it is more productive to have presentations and discussions about the scenarios at the local level amongst staff and local elected officials in terms of how this impacts that jurisdiction, than to have a public engagement process that sort of jumps over that. That has some real limitations, but we are trying to work with each of the counties. In terms of the issues identified in West Oakland, and we have specific requirements for plans that are funded by the agencies and so forth, but how communities structure their dialogue and how they do planning at that level is really, it's a local issue. The other piece I'll mention is we did fund and had a number of public meetings that were much more involved and I think much more successful with community-based organizations in the spring and a half dozen communities of concern. Those, as I understand it, went very well. At least that's the feedback I've gotten from a lot of different people. And they seem to bring things down to a level that was really helpful. In some communities that are likely to take on a fair bit of growth in the strategy and that have particular concerns to make sure that affordable housing is preserved and so forth.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
I have a question about the policies that are coming out, and they'll be in draft form. And so just as you said, each county is different. The way the policies are implemented has implications for the local context. The first round of policies that we saw a number of months ago might work in higher density PDAs, but not necessarily in the large amount of non-PDAs. What is the review time for those policies, those initiatives? When can we be thinking as locals in seeing them and getting the comments with the, for example, getting comments on the preferred scenario? We had a 3-week time frame, which doesn't work very much if you meet once a month. So if we can get a heads up on what that will look like in terms of reviewing the initiatives and providing some input from local jurisdictions.
Linda, just so I understand, are you talking about the transportation policies, like the TDM policies and so forth?
It's the policies that make up that 6.5%.
I think you can expect to see them next Friday. I think also the December Planning Committee had a table that included a laundry list of policies. I think you can expect that that's the list that will probably come back again with perhaps some slightly updated figures. But some version of that. So it's a week from Friday. I think the clock will start ticking. I believe that packet may go out as soon as Friday. There's an extra week. I know it's not enough. Parissa, and then Albert.
Okay. On the slide in which, I apologize if I missed this, but on the slide where you listed the decrease in 9% from this scenario, what transportation network were you assuming when you made that calculation? And then I have one other question.
That was using T2035, so that was just sort of used as a placeholder.
Okay, and then you mentioned making a correction of mid-size, some of the allocations to mid-size cities. Can you describe when that happens in the process more specifically?
We're working on that right now, and we'll be bringing proposed adjustments to the scenario and by extension the RENA allocation, the RENA methodology. Back to the Housing Methodology Committee at their meeting in April, and those recommended changes will be going out relative to the draft preferred scenario that the board and the commission will be voting on in May. So it'll be kind of baked into then. We're working on it right now, and we're really trying to see, make these adjustments that have been identified by a lot of different folks, and also seeing if there are some particular things that we can do that will move the needle on GHG, but also hold together the basic construct of the scenario, which we think, and based upon a lot of the feedback we've received from a lot of local jurisdictions, that it works pretty well.
Albert, and then Curtis.
Albert Lopez, Planning Director, Alameda County. My question is about the similar to the last one about the fix for unincorporated. We have a huge number that, I mean, it's clearly an error. And we wanted to know, are you going to fix it in May? Is that going to just shift those jobs somewhere else? Or is it just going to, reduce the overall amount for Alameda County? That's one question. I just had a few other comments. I'm also interested in how you're going to get to the 15%, the 6% delta. I was also wondering if there was any sort of legislative fix being proposed at the state level for infill, not just for the affordable housing, but just, whether through, you know, the insurance industry or financing or something, some other way to help with this, you know, figuring out how to facilitate infill development. And then just one comment on the One Bay Area Grant, more of a marketing thing. I think you should call it a PDA bank or something like that, because I get confused about there's more than One Bay Area Grant, it seems like, and if this is going to be our big bank, I think a lot of people would be looking to it as a funding source. Maybe call it something that just people, you know, associate with money, because it might be confusing. So anyway, just that one question on the unincorporated numbers.
Okay. So we're looking at several what I think are individually modest adjustments, but should result in some shift in the distribution between what was released for the jobs housing connection scenario and what we'll be looking at in May, one of the more significant being the unincorporated counties. We're looking at, you know, what needs to be corrected for the counties, and then it goes back to a regional level. We've also been able to, based upon, you know, the work that's been done with the alternative scenarios, we've been able to use the new transportation model and assess VMT. We can look at that by zone, and we can, and the model essentially suggests VMT is at this level, and we have it by tiers. So we have a sense of, you know, what are those places that, in terms of VMT, and largely by extension, greenhouse gas reductions, are the places that we're going to do better. We can then weigh that against what is the community capacity, what have the local jurisdictions said, how much job growth is expected. So we are looking at the unincorporated counties, including Alameda, and we're looking at how we can best shift that into this draft preferred scenario. The 6% delta was just touched on in terms of the transportation policies. A lot of it's transportation demand, pricing, parking, things of that sort that will be discussed and I think will be in a staff report that's coming out this Friday, and will be discussed next Friday here at 10 a.m., Friday the 13th. And then the infill piece, and this gets to some of the sort of vague term of policies. We will be, I was going to say I think we will be, but we will be bringing back, you know, policy ideas that have been developed to this group probably in the late summer to begin discussing with you all of, okay, this is the direction we're trying to go as a region. What are some of the policies that might be workable? What direction should the agencies pursue? What are we missing? And I think it'll be a really good discussion, and, you know, I do think it's very positive in that the policymakers at the commission, at the executive board, really see this gap, that there are certain things that as a region, not meaning so much MTC and ABAG, but as a place, the Bay Area, that we really need to try to address to have a more sustainable growth pattern. I think the time is right to have a more fulsome discussion and some more solid ideas than as a region we've had in the past.
Curtis and then Val.
Yeah, just briefly, what is the date in May that the draft will be considered preferred scenario?
I believe it's the 17th.
The 17th is the meeting. 17th is the meeting of both the commission, the full commission, and the ABAC board. But the report will be released on May 11th on Friday at the joint planning and admin committee.
Val?
Ken, back to your point about policies, I'm curious to know for kind of the outside of the nine counties or the regional edge that we have, whether you expect that you're going to be looking at some kind of explicit policies about investments or strategies, or will it just be implied based on where the land use pattern ends up?
Do you mean like a toll gate at the Altamont Pass or what?
Well, just, you know, how the region expects to invest and still have a thriving economy and get, you know, trucks or freight to the port, that kind of stuff.
I mean, I think, you know, if you look at the different policy components that are moving forward from the Transit Sustainability Project to the transportation priority project approach that's been taken and so forth. There's clearly, I think, a shift to some extent in terms of really trying to support projects that perform well on a number of measures that tie to a more focused growth pattern. In terms of how it relates to the region's edge, I don't think there's going to be any kind of explicit policy that pulls things away or puts up any kind of barrier, but there's certainly a direction across the board to support what we have and to try to focus more growth where we have and then in turn support it some more. But are you speaking specifically about goods movement policies or things of that sort? Or? I think it's more about supporting the region and its current development pattern and putting more growth there and having transportation policy that supports that as well, sort of across the board in terms of transit, new transit, maintaining what we have and so forth.
Have we worn everybody out on the forecast? Seeing a lack of red lights and standing people, I'll take that as a yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken, and thanks all for your helpful and clarifying questions. Next up, the aforementioned One Bay Area grant, which may very much be in need of a new marketing campaign, but I'll leave that to Craig and Alex.
Good morning. I'm Craig Goldblatt with MTC staff, the Programming and Allocations Committee. And today I'm going to walk you through the latest round of revisions that staff is recommending for the One Bay Area grant. Just to kind of bring you up to date on where we are now, on July 8th, this is when we made our initial release of the proposal for the One Bay Area grant. And after that, we went around to all the committees and got output. And based on what we heard at that time on January 13th, we went back to the joint MTC Planning Committee and ABAG Administrative Committee with our first round of recommendations. And now we're going to go during the month of April back to the committees with yet a further round of revisions for consideration by the working groups. And I just wanted to also mention that today I've given you a PowerPoint covering this, but very shortly we're going to be having, probably in 2 days, a accompanying memorandum that will provide more detail. So we'll make that available to you.
Will that also be available to the public, sir?
Yes. The first time we'll be using the memo will be for the Policy Advisory Council meeting. And that should be up on our website in the next few days. So I'm just going to walk through what we heard at the last joint MTC ABAG committee meeting. And what we heard were, number one is something I'm going to cover, but that wasn't what we heard at the meeting. But the other points we did, issues were raised about the PDA requirements that we have, that counties need to make OBAG investments 50% for the smaller four North Bay counties and 70% for the larger counties of the OBAG has to go into PDAs. The other issue is on the programming, the priority conservation area pilot program in the North Bay. The other areas we've heard comments about had to do with affordable housing production and preservation of those resources. The fifth area had to do with the performance and accountability requirements in OBAG. And the sixth had to do with some accountability of how the money was going to be spent, the OBAG money. And lastly, there were numerous requests for more Safe Route to School funding and additional funding to the PTAP, the Pavement Technical Assistance Program. The first area I want to outline is we're proposing to add a fourth year of funding to the program. It has been
you know, up to this point, a three-year program. And the reason for doing this is that we have a bigger shelf list of projects that will allow us to better manage the apportionment and obligational authority that comes to our area. And we have certain targets where we have to deliver projects each year. And by having more years, that'll help us, and that'll also help project sponsors, particularly for the more challenging projects, to have an additional year. We would put those projects in the last year of the program. So as a result of adding a fourth year, that allows us to increase the overall program. So the OBAC program would be increased to $320 million. That was previously from $250 million. This increase of 70% of OBAC would go to the congestion management agencies, and they would have call for projects, and they would select projects and make those recommendations to MTC for programming. Also, on the regional program side, we would be increasing that by $117 million, and that is an increase from $753 million to now $470 million. Also at the meeting, there was some... Originally, we had in the original OBAC proposal, you know, the 50% and 70% thresholds, the investments had to be within priority development areas. There has been a request for flexibility, which we had provided, but there still were questions and requests on more guidance on what it would mean for a project to directly connect or provide proximate access to count toward the PDA investment minimum. So our recommendation is rather than provide specific guidance on what these things mean, we think it would be more fruitful for that to be decided at the county level, and each congestion management agency would look at the projects that they receive, and they would basically map the projects that are outside of PDAs that they're considering to fund, and they would provide the policy justifications through an open, transparent process involving the public. At the joint meeting, there was also a lot of discussion about the new pilot North Bay Priority Conservation Area program. And I think the two areas where we heard a lot about this program was that this has been limited to the four North Bay counties, and there has been some requests and interest by some of the other counties to be able to participate in this program. And there was a lot of discussion as well on how the money for this, the limited funds for this program would be applied to priority conservation areas, and you know where that emphasis should be, whether it should be on transportation projects or you know be more directed toward actual acquisition of some of the priority conservation areas. So the recommendations would be to look to be able to harness a lot of the interest by some of the trusts and other fund pots in the area that MTC and ABAC could bring to the program, and that hopefully will allow us to go beyond the $5 million program, along with sponsor matches for those projects that would allow consideration of other projects outside of the North Bay. With respect to how the program will work, the eligibility criteria, and how we would evaluate the projects and where we would give more priority, we are proposing on holding some meetings before we would go back to the commission later to define how the framework of this program will actually pan out. So we will be holding those meetings in the summer or the fall, and we'll be going back to the committee to the commission with you know a final framework for this program. We also heard a number of comments regarding how the One Bay Area grant would reward affordable housing production and preservation of resources. And I think the concern is that the way the OBAC program is allocated to the counties is on a county-wide basis rather than a jurisdiction basis, and that it's up to the congestion management agency to decide at a sub-county level how the jurisdictions would receive the funds. There was some interest in trying to find some mechanism to reward jurisdictions that are doing a really good job in the affordable housing area. The other concern was that we had, in our original proposal, had a number of supporting land use policies that we were
requiring a menu approach that jurisdictions need to meet. One of those had to do with affordable housing preservation and production, and we moved, you know, we had eliminated that, and there was some request to see if there was some way that we could weave that back into where we are with the One Bay Area grant proposal. So the recommended revisions include the following. One would be that we would look to the CMAs to look at what those jurisdictions are that are have been very successful in the affordable housing arena, and to facilitate those discussions, we're going to be providing to all of the counties intra-county figures showing of each factor that we use to give the county as a whole OBAG funds. What factors, like what on a jurisdictional level, like what is their contribution to what the county gets as a whole in terms of RENA, low income and very low income, and housing production for those categories, and population, et cetera. So that discussion can happen at the county level, and those jurisdictions will know when they're talking about how projects are going to be allocated, what their contributions are. The other important piece would be that there's a priority development area growth strategy that we're going to be asking congestion management agencies to develop. And that will show us and guide the CMAs in how they're going to be making investments in the One Bay Area grant program toward PDAs. And what we would do is part of that effort, developing that growth strategy, we're going to be asking the PDAs, the CMAs to work with jurisdictions that have PDAs to look at what is in place currently in terms of what affordable housing policies and displacement policies are on the books in those jurisdictions, and have an add-on piece that would make recommendations to those jurisdictions, specific policies and ordinance recommendations. Based on what MTC will be looking at those and considering those when we have the next funding cycle after OBAG, and consider whether that those adoption of those policies might be a condition of funding in the future. The other piece would be the PDA. In conclusion on the PDA growth strategy, we also want to have the CMAs present to the Joint Planning and ABAC Committee in fall 2012 what their approaches are going to be in terms of OBAC and PDAs. Then MTC has a new program, which is the Son of the Station Area Planning Program, which is going to be called the PDA Planning Program, where grants will be made to various PDAs to do planning. And as part of that program, there will be an emphasis on these affordable housing issues, and we're going to implement those through the funding agreements that we're going to have with those grantees. There were some questions about how CMAs might be selecting projects and what jurisdictions might be winners or losers in the project selection process. So there was some requests that there be This is the complete streets requirement, where we had originally had two requirements under performance and accountability. One would be that for complete streets, we were requesting that all jurisdictions by July 2013 comply with the Complete Street Acts of 2008, which involved a general plan amendment to their circulation elements. And then the other piece was that we had required that that the general plan amendment of a jurisdiction had to be which had to be RENA compliant, that had to be adopted by the Housing and Community Development Department by July 2013. There were concerns expressed that both of those items could be very difficult for jurisdictions to meet. So we moved to be more flexible on those. And rather, in lieu of the general plan requirement meeting the Complete Streets Act of 2008, that instead we would be asking that every jurisdiction adopt a complete streets ordinance by October 1st, 2012. But if any jurisdictions had a general plan that already met the Complete Streets Act of 2008 or were heading towards having an approved element by this deadline, that would serve in lieu of the ordinance requirement as well. Also, we included a waiver process that if there was any jurisdiction that felt that they had a general plan element that met RENA, but they were having problems getting housing and community development buy-off on that, that there would be a waiver process that the MTC planning ABAG administrative committee meeting could consider those waivers. There are a number of performance and accountability deadlines that in the past we've kind of had sprinkled throughout our memo. So I thought it would be useful to just have all of them on one page so we could quickly go through what the deadlines were for each of them. One of them is that we have a jurisdiction adoption deadline that each jurisdiction adopt a resolution of intent which would align PDA zoning and RENA. At that same date, also, each jurisdiction would need to adopt a complete streets ordinance. Also on that date, the CMA would need to adopt a PDA growth strategy. And the reason for this date is that this puts these pieces in place before the CMAs would go out to do call for projects for One Bay Area Grant and make those decisions. Then on July 1st, 2013, we will require that there be HCD adoption of a jurisdiction's general plan housing element to meet RENA. And on October 1st, 2013, we would look at the CMAs to follow up on their PDA growth strategy amendment to incorporate some of the local affordable housing policies and recommendations that they have for each of the PDAs in their county. There was concern expressed at the Joint Committee that to take a look at what decisions CMAs make in allocating OBAG funds to projects in each of the CMA areas. So how we're proposing on doing that is that we are going to put together a report card, so to speak, that's going to outline the project selection process outcomes. And we're going to bring that to our commission. And those would include things such as what, you know, of the programs that are available, what projects were selected, you know, where and how the investments were made in PDAs, the status of the complete streets investment, how well jurisdictions met performance and accountability requirements, and how the funding panned out between the jurisdictions, given how they how the factors worked in each of those jurisdictions in a county that were behind the county's overall grant amount. There were requests, as I mentioned earlier, to increase the funding for the Safe Route to Schools program and the PTAP program. So we're recommending that we're going from a three-year to a four-year program, mind you. So we would be increasing the Safe Route to School program from $10 million over a three-year period to $20 million over a four-year period. And that, in essence, raises funding on an annual basis back to the same level that we had, you know, over the last funding cycle. And then we would similarly increase the PTAP program to $7 million that, you know, would meet the needs of the program and fully fund it based on what the kinds of activities and some of the planning responsibilities and data that program was able to contribute to the regional process. The next few slides just kind of shows you an update is a result of us adding funding, what the programs are that are being funded out of this Cycle 2 STP CMAC funding program. Above are all the regional programs that are going to be funded, and at the bottom is the One Bay Area Grant Program that goes to the county congestion management agencies that is $320 million. This is the OBAG distribution formula. 50% is based on population. The other 50% is housing plays a role in distribution, and that's split down into actual housing production. Total 12.5%, which is total housing production, and then a 12.5% piece based on low and very low income housing production. And similarly, we've done the same for RENA for the other 25% piece of the pie. So with a higher OBAG amount, these are the new rounded amounts of what each county will be receiving under the One Bay Area grant. And we're offering total flexibility to CMAs to be able to fund whatever funding amounts out of what they receive for these program categories for local streets and roads preservation, bicycle and pedestrian improvements, transportation for livable communities. They can choose to augment, even though Safe Route to School program is it's a regional program, we're also allowing them, if they would like to further augment that program, they can do so out of the One Bay Area grant. Similarly, they can use their funds for priority conservation area purposes. And then, you know, as in the past, the CMA will be able to use a portion of that money to fund some of their CMA planning activities, as well as being able to administer the One Bay Area grant program in their county. The next steps place us in April, this month, which we're going to be going around to all the committees to discuss the newest round of revisions. Then in May, the things we need to do is from the beginning, we viewed the set of RENA that was going to be used in the distribution formula to be the new RENA amount. So we're going to be looking at the new RENA methodology as it becomes available in the next few weeks. And we will possibly revise the fund distribution. But we're hoping that there will really not be significant changes, but we'll be getting back to you on that. And then the Joint Committee will be reviewing the proposal and making recommendations on May 11th, and then there'll be the MTC Commission final adoption of the program on May 23rd. In June, we'll begin OBAG program implementation. We're going to be working with the congestion management agencies to go over the individual requirements. And then in July, there's going to be an update on the priority development area designation requests. Many of them which involve the growth opportunity areas that we had published along with the PDAs in the maps that we made available to you in the earlier proposals. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. DeWitt.
Yes, sir. My name is Dwayne DeWitt. I'm really glad to see some of the things you've put up there, but I wanted to ask you from a community standpoint. As you say, in April, there'll be continuing outreach. Does this just go to agencies, this outreach, or will the community be informed about these ideas about the priority development areas and their designations and what they'll want?
So specifically the priority development areas, that is kind of under ABAG's purview, so that
right.
will be through their process. I can't speak. I don't know. I'll turn that over to Ken.
Well, I think in terms of the PDA growth strategy,
uh-huh.
Well, first let me back up. I mean, the basic structure of the One Bay Area grant is to, on the one hand, provide increased funding and a lot of flexibility at a county and local level to shift some of the funding decisions and what have been a series of kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say siloed, but separate programs here at the regional agencies, increase the amount of funding, and bring the discussion to a more local level in each of the respective counties. At the same time, there's a basic requirement that, in the more urban counties, 70% of the funding be spent in or near proximate to priority development areas. In the rural counties, 50%. And Craig mentioned the PDA growth strategy component, which is still under development. There's a draft framework that's I believe, in the packet that...
It'll be part of the packet that is posted for the Policy Advisory Council, the one that Craig mentioned. It'll be posted by Wednesday, and we can get a copy out to the group.
Yes, sir. I understand all this. What I'm asking is, community members living in areas, will they be able to advocate if they are in a chosen PDA so that good things could come their way, perhaps, rather than just it slipping by quickly?
They will, and it will be at the county level. So in Alameda County...
The transportation management will
be directing that funding, working with local jurisdictions, and they
we'll have a process to take local input around
and
that.
And so community members will need to learn that process, advocate at that level, try and get funding, and maybe give extra letters to ABAG to let them know it's occurred.
Yes, although I think it makes the most sense to really, you know, focus on working with your congestion management agency and your local jurisdictions in terms of those issues, because that's where, within a given framework, that's where the decisions are going to be made.
Thank you for your help, sir. Not trying to put you on the spot.
Yeah. My name is Parissa Fatehi of Public Advocates, and I just wanted to put out there that our organization is part of a network or coalition of over 30 organizations that cares deeply about this process, and in particular has really invested a lot of time in commenting constructively on the One Bay Area Grant program, because we think it can be a true tool for making the SCS real and rewarding the jurisdictions who are doing their part. So we're really excited about this as a tool, and thank MTC and ABAG for really creating this as a potential tool. That said, I think those groups have done everything they can. They've written letters to you with over 30 groups signing on. They've testified. They got commissioners at the January 13th Planning Committee meeting to really give very clear direction that echoed their recommendation, saying, one, this program should directly go to cities that are promoting affordable housing via production and or has something from a menu that makes sense and gives option and range of anti-displacement and affordable housing policies. And not that feedback said nothing about CMA flexibility, though I understand they are a very important stakeholder in this process. I just don't see in the revisions you're making and the recap you're giving of the public feedback that reflected. I don't see that feedback reflected, and I don't see how the groups that have been involved are being rewarded for engaging in this process and giving such constructive feedback. Right now, you've decided to really prioritize that CMA flexibility, and it sounds like making an enhanced reporting requirement in the PDA growth strategy, which is strong, but an enhanced reporting requirement is not the same as putting strings on the money to reward the behavior that we all know will make this SCS real. And so I think before you guys had said we need to be clear in our guidance to cities, and I think you're taking some steps backward on that, and instead just reporting is just creating more work instead of being very clear about what those requirements should be for the funding. I'm sorry that I didn't bury a question in there. I just think it's a very important thing to have on the record that this input doesn't feel like it's being acknowledged.
You know, I just would briefly like to respond to that. With respect to the checklist, we can make that checklist that the advocates gave us available to the congestion management agencies, but I think it's going to be a lot more effective rather than just a menu approach of making a jurisdiction adopt, you know, one or two of the policies kind of in a menu format, to actually, you know, work it with the congestion management agencies as part of that PDA growth strategy, actually looking what the investment needs are and what all these individual needs are on a jurisdictional level, and come up with policies that are tailored directly to those communities, which might even be outside of a menu that we would give them, and end up resulting in recommended policies that are tailored to each of those jurisdictions. So that's something I think will be quite effective.
I just want to add that the big three cities actually, in their letter, along with the largest transit operators, were the ones that submitted a letter recommending that menu. That wasn't even from advocates. So I want that to be reflected, that was an important input from stakeholders as well.
Thanks, Parissa. Andy?
Thanks. Andy Smith, City of Walnut Creek. Of all the many components of the SCS, I have to admit this is the one that I know the least about, so these two questions may fall into the category of stupid questions. For that, I apologize, but they're simple, hopefully. In your presentation, there was a few points where you said proposing increases in funding under this program, and I wanted to know where's that money coming from. And then on slide 9, you had a list of deadlines, adoption of the complete streets ordinance, referring to the resolution that I know, as was mentioned in the past, about cities basically agreeing that, yes, we're going to align our PDA, housing element, et cetera, et cetera. Are those basically a list of minimum requirements in order to qualify for funding under the One Bay Area Grant Program? So.
In terms of your last question, particularly the jurisdiction level requirements are conditions for funding. Each jurisdiction, if they're going to receive OBAC funding, need to meet those deadlines. And if they don't, we're not going to be able to carry through any grant recommendations that the CMA would make. We're going to also look at the CMA to work with those jurisdictions and look that they comply with those before they pick program projects to the jurisdictions. Then in terms of the funds, the region gets an apportionment on an annual basis from Federal Highway Administration, and most of the funding comes from that agency. And so we're able to program in advance based on what we expect we'll be receiving for those years. So we're going from a 3-year program to a 4-year program. So in essence, we're adding about 33% more apportionment because we're adding an additional, we're programming it yet another year further out that we're including in this proposal.
So are you front-loading the funds?
No, we're going from a 3-year program, and we're adding another year of funding we would expect we would be getting from the federal government.
Okay, thanks.
Alex Walkelman, Director of Program and Allocations. I also just wanted to note, in terms of where the funding is coming from, the funding in the past has had, in many cases, been at the regional level for certain regional programs. So the idea of the One Barrier Grant was to send a lot more money to the county and to the local level to really reward sort of the creation of housing. So that's sort of the context of the One Barrier Grant.
And I'll just really quickly touch on the resolution of intent item. There's actually a proposal, and we need to incorporate it into the PowerPoint to delay that. To not have it be something that's tied to this first year and have it be really structured after plan adoption and around some of the policy issues that have been discussed. We'd like to, as we move toward adoption of Plan Bay Area, really work with local jurisdictions, CMAs, stakeholders, et cetera, around a grouping of policy issues, some of which will require a legislative strategy, and then potentially have that be something that jurisdictions could really be excited about signing on to as something that's really going to promote the priority development areas and really try to move things forward as a region. So it's been a shift in thought. We didn't capture it in the presentation, but that's a general thinking on that front.
I'll just note that a few lights have kind of come on and off, and so I'm going to be calling on folks as I saw their lights previously flicker. To that end, Mike?
Thanks, Doug. Two questions. One is, has there been any consideration, since there are these other policy components of the SCS that are going to be coming to get from 9% to the 15% reduction, so whether the OBAG program might be able to cover some of those policy initiatives as well for communities that may not have PDAs but want to participate in achieving the goals of the SCS? Second question is related to the proposal for the complete street ordinance, exactly what that is, what it's going to contain, and not to get too technical at this point, but there is a CEQA component to adopting an ordinance, and from a timing standpoint, it would seem to make sense that if you adopted an ordinance after the SCS and the EIR were adopted, you could probably tear off that EIR for the complete streets ordinance. So there's a timing question there as well as a content question.
And with respect to the complete streets ordinance, given that that's going to be adopted by every jurisdiction, I don't know if an overall regional CEQA document could probably meet the requirements at a city level. But also we're going to be providing not so much a model ordinance, but what components we would like to see minimal requirements. So we're going to leave it up to the jurisdictions to decide what they want to include in their complete street ordinance. So it will vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The elements that we're proposing are more process points rather than actually telling a jurisdiction what complete streets is and what they need to do as part of Complete Streets. It would kind of be more what the process, that there needs to be a process in place. So I don't think it necessarily would, you know, have to trip CEQA in terms of a significant review. But we're going to be having further discussions on that requirement at our committee meetings this month. And the first question I didn't quite understand. Okay.
So a couple things. Also, just the Complete Streets Ordinance draft memo is kind of circulating through some committees here, so we'll make sure to send it out as addendum to the meeting materials for today's packet so folks can see that. Relative to your first piece, I think under that purview of CMA planning, there are funds included in the OBAG distribution that the CMAs can use for planning purposes. And I think if local jurisdictions wanted to partner with the CMAs on some of these kinds of initiatives, that certainly is an eligible funding expense. So I've got Hanson and then Stephanie. Jeff, I'll put you in line.
Thanks. Hanson Holmes, City of Sunnyvale. You know, one of my first questions had to do with the Complete Streets Ordinance. I'm a little confused when you use the term ordinance, what exactly you're talking about. So really repeating the same question. And usually when I think of an ordinance, like for instance our draft general plan, we're including Complete Streets policies, but the ordinances come later as an implementation element of the general plan. So when you say October 2012, it seems like it could possibly be interpreted as requiring something in advance of the policy adoption by the cities. So, and I do echo the need to kind of take a look at the CEQA issues. That, you know, when you talk about a regional CEQA document by October 2012, you know, each city will also need to follow up with its own individual evaluation. So think about the timeline and the term ordinance. It would be nice to circulate as soon as possible what you mean by an ordinance so that we can evaluate what the requirement is. But I do have a concern with the term ordinance versus, say, adoption of a policy statement. Second question has to do with the OBAG distribution formula. First of all, I do appreciate that there's now a process to apply for employment center PDAs, and I know that that's still pending, the decision on that. But when I see the chart on slide 13, perhaps it's oversimplified, but it seems to overemphasize housing production. So I want to kind of comment on how the OBAG formula takes into account possible transit improvements for employment PDAs as well as employment areas that could be well served by transit stations. Also not clear on the difference between housing production, that's 25% of the formula, and ARENA, which is the other 25%.
Oh, there we go. Remind me again when I'm going to try to answer your questions if I'm missing something. But in terms of the distribution formula, housing production is looking back. We're looking at the most recent housing production report that ABAC produced. I think the idea is and RENA looks forward. What are those housing allocations that jurisdictions are going to take on in the future? There was interest expressed that not only do we look at RENA in the future, but that we find some way that we reward jurisdictions on actual performance. So that was the reason why we're looking at both pieces in the formula. And then you had some comments about the ordinance itself. I think we are looking at an actual ordinance, something that would be enforceable by law in a jurisdiction rather than a policy. So that is the reason why we're looking at it. Something that has teeth similarly to a general plan but would be easier to implement and would have fewer, you know, I think environmental issues, and the process wouldn't be as long, because we heard a general plan can take up to 2 years in a jurisdiction. So for that reason, we're requesting an ordinance.
I guess usually the process is that you adopt the policy and then you follow up with the specific ordinance. That's the typical planning process. The other question that you didn't address was the question about how does the employment center PDAs play into the distribution formula?
So, Hanson, in terms of just, I guess, for everyone, in terms of the new nominations for PDAs, the ABAC Executive Board at their last meeting adopted the vast majority of those, but delayed the rural center, proposed rural center place type PDAs, and we're going to be working through some issues that have been identified on those, and also the employment center PDAs. The employment center PDAs are about transit-served employment centers. There's some specific criteria about the relationship to housing, if it's not within the PDA, what the jurisdiction is doing generally in terms of housing nearby to not lose that piece. As proposed, the employment centers will be adopted as part of the PDA structure, and OBAC funds could be spent across the range of different categories that Craig described, potentially in or adjacent to those PDAs. In terms of how the distribution is arrived at, it's very much what Craig described. The employment centers and jobs were not factored into the distribution requirements. They're being included as areas that could be supported for future growth, but they're not factored into the distribution formula. They're not part of the pie chart. Employment isn't part of the pie chart in that way. It's very much about housing production, both past performance, future RENA allocation, as well as the big piece of the pie, which is just population.
Thanks, and thanks, Craig, for this information. It's extremely helpful. I have three comments/questions. The first one is on the priority conservation area piece. I really like the idea that the program budget could potentially be overall increased and possibly opened up to other counties looking at the potential to leverage funding from outside agencies. And I have a suggestion for how to make that most possible. If, as part of the Priority Conservation Area grant program, we require that projects that can leverage matching funds from outside conservation organizations get priority for the regional funds over projects that cannot leverage those funds, it would mean that it would really maximize the ability to increase the overall program budget and potentially open it up through outside leveraging. So I would just encourage that as a strategy. On the question of the affordable housing production at the city level and the PDA growth strategy, you know, I have to say I personally am really torn on this. On the one hand, you know, we've heard repeatedly that, you know, land use decisions are made at the local level. It is a regional priority to make sure that we get affordable homes built in jurisdictions with PDAs in the right places, and I think it's important that that connection be made, and I'm nervous. I would like to see that happening at the regional level. On the other hand, you know, CMAs make zillions of decisions about funding that could really help or hurt PDAs in their county, and so the idea of, you know, giving CMAs an opportunity to think through what is it going to take to make the PDAs happen and really own that process, I think, is valuable. So I have two suggestions if we do go the kind of county flexibility route that could balance those things. One is I think the report card is just absolutely essential to look back and say, hey, you know, how did we do at meeting our regional priorities for city-level affordable housing production? And then the second is in terms of the PDA growth strategies being presented to the MTC planning and ABAC admin committees, it seems really important that those strategies be presented before they're adopted, so the regional boards have an opportunity to give feedback and the CMAs can incorporate that. Is that the intention in terms of timing?
The PDA growth strategy, the format, will be available for review when it comes. It'll be out on the web in 2 days in terms of the Policy Advisory Council packet, and moving forward, you'll be able to see what is intended and what parts there will be in the growth strategy. So we'll be out for review and discussion.
Okay, but I think your question in terms of the schedule of whether it gets adopted sort of locally and then comes to the joint committee, I think there's flexibility to address that. I think that we had thought about sort of the adoption and then coming to the committee, but I think there's still definitely room for discussion on the PDA growth strategy. We also are meeting with the CMA planning director, so we expect refinements, but I think that's a good suggestion, and I think people would be open to that. So we'll take that into consideration.
Thanks. And then before I lose the mic, I have one last question slash comment. Another thing I really liked seeing was the idea that the PDA planning grant program would place emphasis on affordable housing issues through the agreements with the jurisdiction. And I wanted to ask, can you talk more about what that will look like? And if the answer is no, we don't yet know what that will look like, can you talk more about kind of the process and timeline for developing that criteria for the planning grants related to jurisdictional affordable housing?
Hi, Therese Trivedi, MTC program manager for the formerly known as Stationary Planning Program, now the PDA Planning Program. It's essentially the same thing, and it's already a criterion that is a required element for funding. So the requirement is basically that jurisdictions in the planning process take a look at, well, first of all, I should back up. One of the first steps is to take or provide a planning area profile so that you have some demographics so you know exactly kind of who is in your area now. And then you can use that information then to develop all the different elements, but particularly related to affordable housing. You can then identify who's there now, what potential strategies you might want to develop to preserve the affordable housing you have, as well as policies going forward. So it kind of varies on jurisdiction depending on what's already in place and what refinements might be needed. But it is something that we've already been doing in the last couple of cycles of funding.
I'll just throw in my comment that I think it would be great and appropriate to kind of beef that up in light of some of these concerns that have arisen through the OBEG process.
It would be great to get some suggestions, and actually, if you can actually take a look at what we have right now, because there's a PDA program call for applications, which is due next Thursday. So there is, if you take a look at the appendix, there is a description of all the different elements that we require in the program. But take a look at that, and I'm more than happy to receive input, because we'll be having another call for projects anticipated the end of this calendar year, beginning of 2013.
Stephanie, that was four questions. I think that's at least one too many, probably two. Brad, then Steve, then Andy.
I have a couple of questions first. I don't know which the 4 years are. My question has to do with timing, because I'm not sure if the years are 13, 14, 15, 16, that you're going to get, that we'll be able to get any projects programmed in 13, just because the schedule. If the schedule is that we have to have a PDA growth strategy and present it to you in October, which I'm not sure that's very how possible that is, given our CMAs, the important stakeholders that we are with the limited staff that we have, that we can actually do all the work that's outlined in the strategy by October. If we then can do the call for projects, that takes several months. Then the projects get recommended. I don't know when you're planning on approving those recommendations. They have to get their material into February 1st of 2013. That's not gonna happen.
We had expected that the counties won't be able to obligate money in 13. So for the most part, the regional programs will obligate money in 13. There would be some capacity in case counties, have projects, but we've pretty much expected that they wouldn't be able to obligate until 14, 15, and 16. But one of the reasons for adding the fourth year is so that we hopefully can start this discussion sooner next time, so that we can sort of have a continuous obligation of funds and not lose money.
Okay. One of the things that Craig said that the CMA. The PDA growth strategy and the lessons learned from that effort would apply to the next round of grants. That would be whatever you call the successor of One Bay Area Grant. Is that correct? And not to this round? Okay, thank you. And I appreciate the flexibility that MTC has been trying to and reasonableness, I would characterize it as in the OBAG grant. I do think that the focus on PDAs is a bit like, you know, people with a hammer looking for nails. It's there as your as the previous item showed, there are a lot of most of the growth is not going to go into PDAs, and the need for improvements to encourage alternative modes of travel are not limited to PDAs. As important it is to encourage infill, not all the infill is going to occur in PDAs, and it's so I think I have an issue with the term proximate access. Proximate is just a synonym for next to, and access implies access to that PDA. But I don't think that necessarily all trips that you want to encourage are going to end up in or start in PDAs. If you look on page 25 of your draft jobs, housing, connection, you'll see that in our county, we're one of the counties that's got the 70-30 split, and Sonoma is one of the 50-50s, despite our county having fewer jobs and households forecast to go into the PDAs. And in terms of the particular PDAs that we have in Contra Costa, the Naval Weapons Station is not going to be anywhere near development, and it's, you know, it's 3/8 of the area that we have in our PDAs. It's not going to be starting to develop for at least another 5 or 6 years. So that's my push for changing the term proximate access.
I'll just follow up really quickly in terms of, I think it's important to make a distinction between the share of jobs and housing in PDAs by 2030 versus the growth. The growth is very much for jobs and housing in the scenario as proposed. Significant majority, over 70% of housing is proposed in PDAs. And we're still looking at a majority of housing that would not be in PDAs through 2040, although it's a higher percentage. I think what you're putting on the table is a real issue. It's not the first or the last time we'll hear it. But it also gets to this larger issue that we're per SB 375, but also just the general direction this region seems to go in, there aren't a lot of jurisdictions coming to us and saying, we want to open up the green belt, we want to open up the urban growth boundaries, we have another way to accommodate this growth. We have a really finite capacity in terms of how we can grow, and given the yawning lack of policy supports, given the loss of redevelopment in particular, I think the regional agencies are on the we're trying to walk a walk, and it very much feels like we're on a tightrope some days, but trying to be flexible enough that jurisdictions can do a lot, the CMAs can do a lot to bring some of the discussion to your level, to the county level, make it more real, but also to try to induce development and development that benefits existing residents and future residents in these places. And I think the One Barrier Grant is really, many would say, not enough. But it's a pretty significant effort on the part of the regional agencies to try to inform a different development pattern going forward.
If you think I was implying that we should open up greenfield areas or break urban limit lines, that's not at all my implication. The authority, in fact, has incorporated having an urban limit line into our growth management program. And my point is, though, that even if a lot of the growth goes into future PDAs, most of the trips in the future are going to be made outside of those PDAs. And there may be some. Obviously, there'll be trips to and from PDAs. I was thinking about this on my bike ride to the BART station this morning, that it would be nice to have some money go to help people buy access to transit, make communities that are not necessarily in PDAs walkable and bikeable. And that's my point, not to open up new areas to development. It's that there are infill opportunities that are not within designated PDAs. And it would be good to be able to support efforts to encourage walking, bicycling, and transit use in those areas as well.
Just so folks are aware, it is 11:20, and we want to try and make sure we get you out of here on time. So, Steve, Andy, Jeff.
Okay, I'll make my comments brief. Developing an ordinance is a cumbersome process at the local level. It's about a $30,000 to $50,000 budget item. I have to get it into the work program, convince my boss to convince her boss to convince the city council to put it in the budget. There's CEQA, there's hearings, there's internal coordination between departments. Small jurisdiction, rule of thumb is 9 months, is about as good as you can do. Larger jurisdictions, San Jose's and San Francisco's, there's committees, there's all kinds of other process. So I'd suggest you find a way to delay that along with the resolution of intent. Also, I would suggest that you give us a very precise ordinance format, something that maybe you have some that have rail transit and some that, for jurisdictions that don't. Give us something fairly precise. Tell us what is mandatory to comply with state law and what may be optional. Help us out with this, and you'll get greater, I think, compliance with that overall. That's it.
Thank you. Andy.
Good morning. A couple of quick comments and a question. First, on behalf of bike advocates around the region, I want to thank staff for the Safe Routes to Transit. And that's not just bike, is it? It's bike, walk, livable neighborhoods. I know there's been a lot of pushback to boost the regional Safe Routes program back up to the $17 million we had in the first cycle. I haven't done the math. I haven't had my crack team of analysts look at this, but 20 over 4 gets us close to equivalent to the 17 we had in the first cycle. A second statement, a lot of folks asking or pushing back on complete streets ordinance. I would point out, if you don't know, San Francisco, the city of San Francisco, about 5 years ago adopted a complete streets ordinance. It's part of our public works code. It's pretty simple as a legislative thing. It's not necessarily the best example, but it's an example of a Bay Area municipality and a county who've adopted an ordinance. Following that, we adopted a Better Streets policy. So we didn't go in the conventional order, perhaps, but there are precedents and examples that you can look at in San Francisco of both an ordinance in effect in our public works code and a policy that later became the Better Streets plan and has been adopted into the general plan. And I know conversations about the particularities and examples are ongoing, but at least you could start looking at what San Francisco has done. Finally, following up on something Brad had been asking, and this may truly be a dumb question, and I may have missed this absolutely, but my understanding is this is going to be a four-year program for cycle two. We'll have a call for projects, or I should say we'll distribute to CMAs annually for an annual call for projects. There'll be a biannual. So that's kind of the first part of the question. And it sounds like the first call may not come until next spring. So maybe just speak to what we can expect in terms of the locals having access to funds, how frequently the calls will come, so I'll know how and when to push on my agency friends to go after the money.
As Alex mentioned, the first of the 4 years, MTC will be using regional programs to use up that capacity to keep us in terms of timely use of funds. So that'll give CMAs approximately, 10 months to select projects. So our intent is similar to other cycles that they wouldn't be doing an annual call for projects. They would kind of be looking ahead for over the 3 year period that they would be programming the funds, and we would be giving them guidelines about how much they would need to, when they pick projects, fund in those years. But this would give them the ability to look across all the different program eligibility categories and what all the needs are over that 3 year period and make decisions and balance what those transportation needs are. So we would be looking at getting back from the CMAs by the early summer of next year what those project selections would be.
So a single call for the 4 years of the cycle?
Yes.
And that will probably be next summer?
It would start this fall. So there would be discussions at the CMA level.
Okay. Thank you.
And I just note that this is in addition to other programming decisions that the majority of CMAs make. This is, one piece of a much bigger pie of transportation dollars, lest we forget all the programming authority that each entity has. Jeff, and then Azubuke.
Jeff Levin, City of Oakland. We are, of course, extremely supportive of the OBAG program, but I think at this point we still have some concerns about this proposal. Noting that, you know, the funds are still split 70 to 30, I think it's clear that there will still be money to serve things outside of PDAs. But making sure that the money doesn't just go to PDAs, but goes to PDAs in some reasonable proportion to which PDAs are taking how much of the region's growth is really important. And our concern is that once that money leaves the regional agencies and goes to the CMAs, in attempting to balance direction and flexibility, it feels like we've moved too far in the direction of flexibility and raised the risk that the funding allocations could end up significantly disproportional to where the growth is really intended to take place. I think we need to go somewhere beyond just saying 70% of the money has to go to PDAs and really have some direction to the CMAs that they need to focus on which PDAs are taking large shares of growth and ensuring that some proportion of the funds actually goes there. Secondly, on the affordable housing issues, and I know this has been raised repeatedly, while we may not want to provide a strict set of directions to CMAs or jurisdictions as to exactly which policies are there, I think there still needs to be some clear direction that in order to get these funds, communities of concern where there is significant potential for displacement from high density growth in the PDA areas need to have some kind of anti-displacement policies in place, and there needs to be some direction to the CMAs that they need to explicitly take that into account. Similarly, for what we've been calling communities of opportunity, where there are probably currently relatively low percentages of low-income folks, ensuring that there are policies that ensure access to that development for low-income people also needs to be explicitly taken into account by the CMAs. And I just, in looking at this, it seems like we've sort of said, well, we're going to give you the data, and we're going to assess how you've done at the end of now 4 years, not three. And I think we've just moved too far in the other direction and really need to think this through a little further.
You know, I just wanted to emphasize this is the first time we're doing this program, and I think what we're looking at is to give, the whole idea is that we want to give as much flexibility as possible to the processes in each county, to, you know, with their elected officials and constituencies to work through these issues, versus us from the regional level telling, you know, providing a lot of prescriptive direction. And I think that's the reason why we do want to emphasize that we will be looking at how that process works, but we have confidence that we've worked with the CMAs over previous funding cycles that their boards will be weighing these issues. And but I understand where you're coming from.
Just wanted to add to that, too. I know that we haven't seen, or the group hasn't seen specifics on the PDA growth strategy yet, but there is a document that I guess is going to the Policy Advisory Council first, but it does give guidance on some of the things that you just mentioned. So, you know, communities of concern and the whole housing component, affordable housing preservation and production. So there is some guidance there. It's not just a blank slate.
I put it on my list of things to make sure this group gets, so it should be ready in the next couple of days. It's 11:30. Sorry if you're... No, just kidding. Is it bouquet? Please.
Not funny. Anyway, I'd like to second what Jeff said. I really think that that's important to look at putting additional criteria for communities of concern on the money that's going to the CMAs. And the issue that I was bringing up is around public health. So we met with several staff agencies for MTC and the Air District to say that there needs to be policy. Consider that.
I'll just really quickly, as we get touch on the last issue. Staff at the regional agencies, MTC and ABIC, are working really closely with the Air District on potential approach to really try to move forward relative to best practices for the PM 2.5 issue. We're working with some of the key city staff and so forth to really try to get out from under that issue and get something accomplished by the time this plan gets adopted. It's sort of in the early stages, but I think we're in a more productive place than we've been, so that's sort of a stay tuned item. In terms of the PDA planning program, formerly the Station Area Planning Program, there's specific there are going to be specific requirements for that program going forward that relate to proximate freeways and rail corridors and stationary sources and so forth, really looking at that issue and trying to incorporate it as part of the plan, the neighborhood plan, to a much greater degree than it's been done in the past, both to help jurisdictions work through those issues and provide some funding to address them as part of the plan, but also to make sure we're not ignoring the issue and really trying to make it a more seamless process than we have to date.
So the last thing I wanted to bring up was no conditions. I mean, the flexibility just seems like it's problematic if you have to wait 4 years and you find out that the CMA's programs that they're promoting actually undermines the goals that you're trying to reach. So is there any type of consideration for a safety clause or something that says that, okay, you made this plan, it doesn't really work, we put it in place for 2 years, we've seen it, it's not working, we will withhold funds or kind of do an emergency implementation to say something needs to be reevaluated because it's not working?
So you realize when we program these, we're going to program the funds a lot earlier. I mean, it's not going to be a yearly process. So we should really know what the decisions are going to be by early next summer. And I think we're going to be asking at that time these questions of CMAs, and we'll be able to inform our board on what those decisions are. I don't think we are planning on having any sanctions, but I'm fairly confident, given all the constituencies that are going to be involved at the CMA level and the balancing that they're going to have to do politically, that I don't think that the kinds of problems you might see occurring will be happening. But we will be reporting back to our commission, and if we need to make adjustments, that we most likely would consider those as part of the next funding cycle. But I'm fairly confident that these problems won't arise. Your concern about communities of concern and health issues, I just wanted to add that there's quite a great overlap between the PDAs and the community of concerns, and OBAG does require that a significant amount of money goes to those areas. And of the money that we're making available in OBAG, about half of it are congestion management air quality mitigation funds, so they will be used for projects in the PDAs that will improve air quality.
Yeah, I just noticed in the presentation prior that the transportation piece or the transit piece was very low, and we want to just see something concrete. And I'll end at that point. Thanks.
Thank you. Our last two, I've got Debbie and Linda.
Yes, thank you. With the city of Brentwood not currently eligible for any PDA designations, the question is in regard to the 30% of the proposed 70-30 split that's not being funneled directly into the PDAs. Will there be any, or what will be the type of prioritization for the distribution of that 30%?
I mean, that will be a local process with the CMA. They're going to be making those trade-offs. So we're not telling a region what to do with that 30%. My guess is probably most CMAs do have concerns about funding rehab needs on the streets and roads network.
And I have my guess is they probably would be using the 30% to look at a number of the rehab needs that might not be synonymous with the PDA limits, but it that might be different in Marin or San Francisco. But that you will be working on those issues with your CMA.
Linda.
Okay, thank you. I want to weigh in on the Complete Streets Ordinance. Big deal. I think, didn't we talk about a Complete Streets Rezo originally? Rezos are a little easier to do. OPR does have guidelines about what can be in your general plan policy. There are a lot of cities already have them in their general plan. But the idea to turn around an ordinance right now when everybody's in the middle of budget and setting priorities for next year, this is the timing is just a little difficult to get it done by October. On the rezo of intent, it depends all in the wording, but I know from the city attorney that I worked with for many years, you can't have a city council adopt a resolution directing a certain outcome because it commits a city council down the road to an action prior to any CEQA evaluation or analysis and community vetting. So I just would make a note, you might want to look at what that wording is because that's going to be something, at least in with the one city attorney I'm familiar with, he'd be concerned and worked with us carefully on any wording that we were coming up with the resolution about future action. It became more like, consider doing this at some point. A comment on affordable displacement. I appreciate the flexibility. I think with larger cities, they've taken a certain tact and certain policy decisions. Smaller towns just don't have the developers and the capacity and the staff capacity. They come up with their own approach to it. But to mandate a certain or require a certain kind of approach to the issue of people who whose housing is going to be redeveloped that fits all communities, I appreciate the flexibility for smaller mid-sized and smaller communities to come up with their own approach that deals with that, without having to follow some sort of mandate that works for larger communities. And then finally, on the RENA, this is slide 13, you're using a number that hasn't been adopted, is not even released for draft comment. The methodology hasn't been adopted. Methodology hasn't even been a release for comment. So and we've been telling our local jurisdictions, don't worry, you don't need to comment on these numbers yet. The time has not come. And then now, I got to go back and say, wait a second, maybe you do need to comment on the numbers even though the methodology hasn't been adopted yet. So I would suggest that you go with what's adopted, what's known with our community, or, some kind of way that you're revising your public comment time, because many jurisdictions are just getting these numbers and we're saying they're draft, they're going to change, they'll be tweaked. They'll be different. And so I'm surprised to see that moving so far ahead of the process that's been in place for the new RENA round. And just, again, want to recognize your responsiveness to recognizing the importance of the local context and the work that mid-sized and smaller communities are doing and facing and trying to implement this. The CMA directors are meeting on Tuesday afternoon to review the growth strategy and all of these comments. So if you have local concerns, I'm sorry so many people have left, but if you have local concerns, contact your friends at the CMAs to let them know by Tuesday so that they can bring it to that discussion that we have for feedback on this program.
I'll just really quickly, on the RENA piece, those numbers are there to provide an example of how it might move forward based upon the information we have now. There will be some adjustments in the RENA methodology, and the way this is structured is they'll be captured. The timing is such that they will be captured and will inform the formula. We're not expecting huge shifts from what's out on the street right now. There will be some. But the key intent is to really try to tie these pieces together so the jurisdictions that are taking on a lot of the housing need are also seeing some of the reward in terms of regional funding, and we want to make that as tight as we can.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. Just one quick note. The meeting that Ken mentioned on the 17th of May, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, will not be in this building. I think it may be located very close to a large detention facility that also has a podium and a nice large speaking floor. So stay tuned for that. The next big thing, again, will be the meeting of the Planning and Admin Committees here a week from Friday. Thanks.